Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Boogie. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Life Remixed Radio. It's your girl, Cy Brown, and we are definitely bringing you today's hot topics from a faith-based perspective. I am so happy to have everybody on the air. I'm so happy to have everybody listening. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm happy to have everybody listening, and I'm just kind of happy. We're here on Life Remixed Radio. Let me give you a couple things. You know, you heard the drop. You heard all the good stuff that's going on with the show. Today we have an absolutely amazing guest. We have Jillian the Jaguar Bullock. Now, I have to say I did not know much about her until we did a little Googling and we did a little searching, and I was like, wait a second, what's going on? Hey, Jillian, I just want to make sure you're with us. Can you hear me?
That's great.
Hey, I think we lost Jillian, but that's all good. We're just going to get right into what we do best. I just want to let everybody know today's show is brought to you by the Unlock Your Dreams Conference, taking place at the Holiday Inn right here in Times Square, New York City. I will be honored at this event, and if anybody is interested in getting tickets, please, please do not hesitate to give me a call at 212-560-8980. 212-560-8980. I just opened the chat room, so the chat room is open. And for everyone that wants to call in, please feel free to hit me up at 347-633-9113. Listen, we've got a great programming note. Next week is Author Week. The whole concept of Life Remix Radio is just taking off crazily, and I don't know if that's a word. Is crazily a word? I really don't even know, but whether crazily is a word or not, but the show is doing extremely, extremely well. I'm very proud of it. I get people in the chat room. I get people listening. The Tina Marie interview, I'm still getting emails about that show, and that was last Thursday. I got a lot of comments and a lot of feedback about yesterday's show, which was how to make motivational speaking your day job. So that show wasn't even really intended to take off. It was just kind of, this is what I do. Let everybody know what I do. And I'm still getting feedback from that. So what we're going to do, and I'm announcing it on the air today officially, we are going into kind of a theme week thing type going on. So next week is going to be Author Week. So if you know of anybody who has written a book, and I see Dropping Seed Radio in the chat room, if you know of anybody who's an author, self-published, has a success story as an author, has tips or solutions that they would like to offer to our listening audience, have them shoot my producer, Shamika, an email. Her email address is booking@liferemixedradio.com. Again, booking@liferemixedradio.com. So we would absolutely love to have you on the show next week. I see that Jillian did dial back in, so we're going to pipe her in 1 second. Thank you so much for your patience, Jillian. We're gonna pull you into this conversation in a second because I have oh so many questions for you. But today's note, today's daily devotion comes from the Daily Thoughts of the Hill, from Daily Thoughts from the Hill, from Hillside Chapel and Truth Center in Atlanta, Georgia. And today's scripture reads as follows. For Tuesday, July 29th, 2008, God gives me a gracious plenty. A good host always serves a gracious plenty of food. A gracious plenty is more than one has expected. Serving someone a gracious plenty is an act of kindness that shows guests that they are appreciated and that the host is providing the very best. God is our host on earth, and God serves us a gracious plenty of good each and every day. There is always more than enough. There is always an abundance of everything we need to live a wonderful life. It is up to us to enjoy it and give thanks to our wonderful host for such lavish hospitality. God serves me a gracious plenty of good each and every day. God is a wonderful host and has provided many wonderful things for my delight and enjoyment. I give thanks each day for God's goodness. Thanks, God, in me, as me, and so it is. And today's verse comes from the book of Psalm, 23rd chapter, verse 5, Thou preparest a table before me. Well, you know, it's funny because my grandmother taught me how to say that's a plenty. When I was a young girl, she would feed me at the table, and I'd say, that's enough, and she says, no, that's a plenty. So this is the first time I've actually heard someone say a plenty since my grandmother taught me that when I was a young girl. So that's kind of funny. Today's word of the day, now, y'all know I have a hard time with these words every single day, but today's word is pusillanimous. wait a minute. Pusillanimous. Okay, I got it now. See, I don't read it before I get on the air because I want to learn it with you. So, okay, let me repeat that. Today's word of the day is pusillanimous. Oh, I got it. Okay, I'm going to say it one last time. Pusillanimous. And pusillanimous is spelled P-U-S-I-L-L-A-N-I-M-O-U-S, and I got that from dictionary.com. But the word is pusillanimous, and it means lacking in courage and resolution, contemptibly, fearful, and cowardly. I don't know how to use that in a sentence. I guess the bully made the kid on the playground feel pusillanimous. I don't know. If anybody comes up with a better sentence, hit me up in the chat room because I've never heard of the word pusillanimous before, but it's, you know, it's a new word for me. It's a new word for you. So let's learn and grow together. So on that note, we're going to transition right into today's guest. I just want everybody here tuning into Life Remix Radio to give Julian the Jaguar Bullock like a virtual round of applause. Julian, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Hi, how are you today?
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, my goodness, it's absolutely a pleasure. I think we got cut off a little bit at the
beginning. Yeah, we did.
Oh, sorry about that. I think
that's
we got
okay.
A little...
I was just nervous. I said, let me call back right away.
Oh, no. Well, I'm happy you did. I have... Oh, wait, before we continue, Dropping Seed Radio said, Pusa what? But we have a great show here today, and it's all about learning and growing. So we have a word of the day. And so Dropping Seed Radio just hit me up in the chat room and said, Pusa what? It's pusillanimous, and it's P-U-S-I-L-L-A-N-I-M-O-U-S. So I just want to share that. Say hello to Peas in Their Pod, Rosie, and Big Ink Presents, everybody in the chat room. I hope everybody got to read Jillian's profile on the website on Life Remix Radio. I just want to get right into who you are, and then I'm going to jump into my questions. So, Jillian, can you share with my listeners exactly who you are and what you do?
Well,
I know that's loaded, right?
Yeah. Well,
it's
one
good.
On one aspect, I'm an award-winning filmmaker and writer, producer. I'm a fight choreographer because I'm a black belt in Taekwondo and Wing Chun, and I'm also a boxer, so I do fight choreography. And also am co-creator of Kickbox and Kick Butt Self-Defense for Women.
Ooh.
And I teach females 10 to age 70 self-defense and safety and preventive measures so they won't become a victim of rape, sexual assault, or domestic violence. So that's one part.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is just trying to incorporate all that I do into basically drama action films, because that's what I love to do and that's what I love to watch. So that's basically me.
Well, I think, you know, it's funny you say that, because I'm big on domestic violence, DV awareness,
mm-hmm.
violence against women prevention, and it's no secret, so all of my listeners already know, any opportunity I have to talk about domestic violence and raise awareness, I'm talking about it and I'm saying it whether they want to hear it or not. So I just applaud you for what you're doing for women. But you know what's so funny? I grew up in New York City in the village,
mm-hmm.
and I remember my mother made me take Taekwondo, and I was probably like 8 or 9 years old.
Okay.
Because she said, if you want to wander around New York City in the 80s, and New York City in the 80s was not what it is now, she said, I at least want to feel comfortable that you can defend yourself. I think I made it up to my green belt, and that was about it.
Well, that's something, but I feel as though every woman needs to. What I teach is not just about the self-defense techniques. It's also
okay.
about preventive measures and safety measures that women can learn not to even put themselves into certain situations that could make them a victim.
Mm.
That's the bigger picture, not just learning self-defense techniques, which is a part of it. But,
right.
you know, I also give lectures and seminars on what not to do, you know, with a red signal that should go off in your mind to know that, okay, this is not the best situation for me to be in. I better get away quickly before something escalates into something physical.
Well, you know, how I want to – well, okay, wait a minute. I want to kind of flow with our conversation, and I wanted to talk about the self-defense a little bit towards the
mm-hmm.
end. But you know what? Since we're on it right now, let's stick with it. Now, I remember reading that you – did you train in wrestling as well?
Yeah, I trained with I was trained in wrestling. The guys who trained for the WWE, which is the World Wrestling Entertainment, that, you know, comes on TV.
Right.
I trained with the Wild Samoan Training School up in Allentown. The owner of that, Alpha Anawati, he is the uncle of The Rock, who we all know
Ooh.
From wrestling and action films. So, you know, his whole family has been in the WWE. So I went up there to train and put that information with my boxing and martial arts to have a well-rounded program. So.
What made you get into that? Like, you know, I don't want to make it sound stereotypical, but what made you think of getting into wrestling and boxing? Like, that's not typically stuff as little girls we're encouraged to do.
Well, I got into martial arts when I was around 11 after I had been a victim of rape. A family friend raped me. And after that, I said, you know, I'll never be a victim again. So I went and started taking Taekwondo at that point. And then as I got older, I took Wing Chun, which is another form of martial arts. But boxing and wrestling came about 10 years ago when I actually was recovering from ovarian cancer. My son would always watch wrestling, which at the time I hated because I thought it was fake. So
right.
I said, I'm not watching that. But I was after I was even in remission from cancer, I was depressed for like 3 years because my best
wow.
male friend died from cancer. He was going through the battle at the same time I was, and he didn't make it. And I guess I was just depressed thinking, you know, you're always thinking you're going to die too. So, you know, I was all alone. I didn't have that much family support and everything to help me through it. So I was just depressed. But my son made me watch wrestling every week. It would help. He said, it'll make you feel better, Mom. And it actually did. So
wow.
I got out of my funk, and I found this school up in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I started going. And then it was a boxing school around the corner from me, and I just wandered in there one day and loved that. So I just kept going.
You know, I want to touch on something that you mentioned. I didn't even know that you had ovarian cancer.
Right.
And my mother was diagnosed last August, actually on her birthday, August 8th, with stage 3 ovarian cancer.
Wow.
And, it, you know, basically they told her, well, you know, we're just going to make you comfortable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was like, what? What the hell? Well, I don't think she said that, but that's what I said. I'm like, huh? And, you know, I just think with her diagnosis, I had no clue what it was. I didn't understand at the time how prevalent, if I can be so forward as to think, ovarian cancer really is. Like,
right.
you hear all the time breast cancer awareness.
Right.
Like, is ovarian cancer that major?
Yeah, it's one of the most deadly diseases for women. Actually, Halle Berry is the spokesperson for one of the foundations for ovarian cancer
I'm
to
sorry,
bring
can
more
you
awareness.
Speak up a little bit. I can't hear
okay.
you.
I said actually Halle Berry is a spokesperson for one of the ovarian cancer foundations.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're trying to bring more awareness to the disease because it's one of the most deadly diseases, but no one actually speaks of it because, you know, like you said, more, I mean, it's not as prevalent as breast cancer, but it is, it's up there high, and people don't really talk about it, and they should because so many women are dying from ovarian cancer. They don't get checked. They don't get their pap smears every day, every year like they should. They'll get a, they'll do the breast exams, but they won't go get their pap examination every year like they should, so...
Keep talking. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. So basically, that's the only way you can find out if you're having any type of problem, unless you see a problem, like, you know, you're having, you know, vaginal discharge or you're having a lot of pain down in your vaginal or uterus area.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that's later. Then you're in trouble by that time. So you really have to do the preventive measures with that as well and go get checked every year.
You know, it's funny. I announced at the top of the show, I mean, this is serendipity, I'm telling you this, and this is why I do this show every single day, because I tell you, you know, just so you get a little bit of history about Life Remixed Radio, I heard in my left ear, which everybody knows that's when God is talking to me, to do a radio show, and I'm like, okay, this is crazy, I don't know anything about radio, I've always been in the media as a publicist and just, you know, in the entertainment industry. So I Googled and I found Blog Talk Radio and I found out that they had just gotten $4.6 million in funding. And I was like, you know, let me set it up. And being the aggressive person that I am, I said, you know, I'm going to set up a daily talk show. Let's see how it works. Well, in less than a week, the show went from 30 minutes to 1 hour.
Wow.
And I asked God every single day before the show to give me direction as to where this show is supposed to go. Now, ironically enough, the show just started on July 7th. So we're just 3 weeks into the show. But I want to make a point that I ask for direction to help people and bring information to them, which is why we have the word of the day. And we, you know, just to give that word of encouragement. So just today I was talking to my producer. I said, we need to do something on cancer awareness, you know, with my mother. And then here you are. I didn't even realize this. That you can provide such valuable insight, and I'm not trying to highlight that part of your career because there's so many other things that I want to touch on, such as your filmmaking and your books, but I'm asking you, and you don't have to comment now, if you would come back in September, because September is Cancer Awareness Month, and I would love for you to do a show so people can put a face with cancer, and really maybe it will encourage, I feel if it encourages, and we use this show as a vehicle to encourage one woman to get checked, I think it could possibly save a life.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Trust me, I'm an advocate for anything that I can do to help people become more aware of this deadly disease and how we have to really, you know, fight it, and we can only do that through education and learning what we need to do to prevent it, or once we if we have it, how we can help get better without, you know, thinking that the first thing we're going to do is die. There's great ways that you can do through health and fitness and nutrition that can help you overcome cancer. So people need to know about that.
Well, I'm just jumping out of my skin right now. I'm so happy because this just delights me, because the more I talk to my guests and the more people hit me up in the chat room and let me know and encourage me, it can help me encourage my guests, because I feel people grow by hearing other people's testimony. I feel people take action based on what if they can see somebody as a living example and a living witness. So, okay, enough on that. Let's go back to the filmmaking.
Okay.
You worked on Malcolm X. Talk about
yeah.
that.
in 91, I graduated from college with a degree in communications, and part of your curriculum is film production. So you have to learn how to do all aspects of filmmaking, writing, producing, directing, behind the camera, lighting, everything. I was fascinated with the directing part. I've always been a writer since I was young. You know, I've always written, you know, poems and short stories. And then as I was going through school, I was a reporter for the Wall Street Journal.
That's
so
pretty
I had the writing part. So I wanted to get more into the director part. So I figured an internship would be a good way to get my feet wet.
Mm-hmm.
So I got an internship on Malcolm X. I was only on the set a couple of months because, for one, they didn't pay. For two, I had to commute back and forth from New York to Philadelphia every day, which was hard because I had three children to raise. So,
wow.
As a single parent. So that was kind of difficult. But in those 2 months, I learned an awful lot about what I would and wouldn't do as a filmmaker on a set. So it was very educational. So
what did you take away from that? Did you, at that point, once you worked, I mean, that movie is just, I mean, so highly acclaimed and recognized. So did you, at that moment, was that a defining moment to say, okay, I'm going to continue into filmmaking or I'm going to go back to writing?
Well, the experience wasn't the best experience for me. It was hard. It was Spike Lee is a very tough director, I learned. And he was going through a lot of financial issues because, you know, he ran out of money. He had to go to all these other celebrities to get the money, Bill Cosby and everybody else, to get money to complete the film. So he was under a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. And I don't know if that's, you know, he might have taken it out on the crew or whatever, but it was a rough production. And at that point, I did think about not doing production again. I said, I'm just going to be a writer. Because it was rough. But I said, no, I said, because, you know, like I said, I learned the good and the bad of it. I understood what he probably was going through. No one wants to be threatened with their film being taken away from them. And he had to do what he had to do to make sure the film stayed on track. And it probably was a lot of pressure that I didn't understand at the time.
Right.
I was just an intern. But, you know, later now that I look back on it and have been a director myself trying to get funding and everything, I understand there's a lot of pressure. So,
you know, it's funny. I just, you know, not to make this a Spike Lee conversation, but I was watching CNN's Black in America, and they interviewed Spike Lee. Soledad O'Brien had interviewed, you know, he just had a very small segment, and he actually talked about how he was trying to get funding to complete the film, Malcolm X, and how he had to call, you know, friends and tastemakers to help fund the movie.
Right, yeah, because the studios wouldn't give him more money, and they were threatening to take the film away from him because he ran out of money and they didn't think he was going to be able to finish it, so he just called upon the people that he knew, who thankfully were opened their checkbooks up and helped him out.
You know, I firmly believe in having a powerful sphere of influence. I mean, and it's not necessarily people that you can call to say, can I have $5 million, just write me a check. But it's just people in your, I guess I'm going to be redundant, your sphere of influence who can really keep you encouraged and keep you on track. And there's accountability that goes with that. And I think that just speaks to him as a leader. Now, I know you filmed Jaguar Productions, so now, what happened with Spirit? Is that fully done, or is it coming theaters? Talk to us about that, your feature film.
Spirit actually, well, we had a lot of people in it that were with the WWE, so we actually made a deal with the people with the WWE because they basically wanted to remake the film with bigger actors and bigger budgets, which is fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good thing because, it gave, again, another stepping stone, another learning experience of how the Hollywood system works. And, you know, I still made some money off of that. So if they want to do what they want to do, put it on the shelf, remake it, it's up to them. I got paid for my part. So, that's all I can do. And then you move on to the next project. That's all you can do.
So in a situation like that, was Spirit part of your Jaguar Productions, or was it something that was made to be sold later on down the line?
No, it was part of Jaguar Productions. It was under my company, and I went out and got the funding, got the people, and hired the crew and shot it and directed it and produced it and wrote it, you know, as an independent filmmaker.
Like Tyler Perry, right?
Yeah. So it's like Tyler Perry, you got to do it all because, you know, that's the only way you can have your voice heard, because Hollywood is not always looking to do the type of films that African-Americans want to do. So you have to do it yourself. You can't say, I'm just not going to do it. You have to find a way to make it happen.
You know, I just think with you being so involved as the screenwriter, director, the producer, script doctor, if you will, how do you find time to incorporate choreographing the fight scenes, or all of your films now don't have fight scenes in them?
No, they do. Actually, the film I'm working on now, we're in pre-production, called The Champion Side. It's a boxing film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a film about a female champion boxer who is forced to retire because she learns she has breast cancer.
Uh-huh.
And it talks about her fight to regain her title after she's been out of boxing for 5 years. And it's a fear of getting back into the ring because when she lost her championship belt, she didn't know she had cancer and she got beat really bad. So
Wow. She
has all this fear coming back, and there's a lot of boxing in that, and we have a lot of professional boxers that will be in that film. But the lead actress, who we're talking to, a couple of lead actresses in Hollywood, they won't have boxing experience, so it'll be my job to teach them how to look like a boxer, kind of like Hilary Swank and Million Dollar Baby. She wasn't a boxer, but you got to make her look like a boxer, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, is this going to be like regionally released, nationally released? Like,
that's gonna be national. That's gonna be national because it deals with cancer, so we have cancer organizations who are our sponsors. We have the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation, who's one of our sponsors. We have the Lance Armstrong Foundation, who's one of the sponsors. So it's going to be national because it's linked to cancer organizations, and we want the film to be entertaining but also educational because a lot of women have myths about breast cancer or cancer in general. Like when I started fighting and getting into the ring to fight, my mother always told me, when I did get cancer, you got it because you kept getting kicked and punched, and, you know, I said, and I thought that was real. No, it's not.
Oh, I was like, that doesn't.
It's not.
Oh.
But a lot of women think that, especially a lot of female athletes think if they get cancer or something happens like that, they think it's because of the sport that they're doing, which my oncologist said, that's not true. It's a myth.
Yeah,
so.
You know, my mom was a party girl. You know, we lived a high life, and the first thing she made sure I was very clear about is she said, Saida, ovarian cancer is not lifestyle induced.
Okay, right.
So she said, there's nothing I did to,
right.
you know, to bring
right.
this on. And I said, well, Mom, you know, what didn't? She's like, I don't know. When they know and they let me know, I promise I will let you know. So I just think it's wonderful that you have such a history, you know, just really a history of the film. And I, you know, one of the reasons why I was really happy to interview you is because I think your story is so unique. Just a fight choreographer, a boxer, a wrestler, martial artist. I mean, that just seems so cool to me, especially coming from a chick. And I say chick not in a facetious way. Please don't.
Right.
I mean, I'm just like, you know, I am so girl power all the way. Do you mind answering a question from one of the people in the chat room?
Oh, no.
Big Ink Presents asks, I have a question for the guest. When X came out, I was a sophomore at Brooklyn Tech. I was afraid of the movie but loved the energy. Once I saw it, I was ready for change. What was your expectation of X then?
Oh, then. Well, I guess I was looking at it from both perspectives. I was looking at it from learning more of the history of Malcolm X. I didn't know much about film, unfortunately, before I even started working on the film. Of course, I had to do a lot of research before I got to work on the film because I didn't want to be ignorant going onto the film. I learned a lot watching Denzel Washington as he prepared for his role as Malcolm X and how he transformed into that character, which was so believable. Everybody that was on the set talked about Malcolm X a lot and his giving to the community and what he did for African-American people. A lot of things I didn't know before I went into, I did know afterwards, and then it made me obviously a much stronger person, more knowledgeable, and I could share with others. You know, it was wonderful working on the film and then being able to share with my family and friends and everybody more about the filmmaking process and more about Malcolm X. And basically, he just didn't conform to the standards of society. And he was saying that African Americans should not do that because we shouldn't use excuses for why we can't make it. So that was another reason why I stuck in the filmmaking, even though it was difficult for African American female, because you can't have excuses just because you are of color, or because you're a female, or because you're handicapped. You know, because you grew up in poverty. These all excuses.
Oh, you sound like me. You almost sound like a Republican. Watch out now.
No, I am a Democrat, so.
No,
but
I am too. Well, I'm an independent, but, I say that all the time. I believe in personal responsibility.
Right, right. And that's all it comes down to, and that's what I learned from working on that film, basically.
One last question from Big Inca says, did you think the movie would start a movement?
I did think that. I was kind of disappointed that it didn't. And I think, again, that's the problem that we have people may not like what I'm about to say, but I think that is a problem with African-American people.
Oh, you better tell it.
Well, you know, we tend not to stick together. We tend not to help one another out, and we tend not to understand how important it is to look at things like Malcolm X or other movies like that, like The Great Debaters with Denzel Washington and Forest Whitaker. You know, that movie didn't do well at the box office, even though it was critically acclaimed, because
right.
African-Americans didn't go out to support it, you know. You know, they prefer to go watch a big-budget action, you know, movies,
right.
Which I love action movies, obviously, but we have to be there to support each other, because that's the only way those type of films will get funding, and Spike Lee wouldn't have the trouble. He still has trouble getting funding to do the films he wants to do of social cause, or, you know, he won't just do a action film or a black film, as they say. But, you know, we pay for that because we don't get the support that we need from our people. And I think we need to stick together more and support each other, or it won't be any change.
You know, well then, okay, I have my next question is a two-parter. Well, and I'm going to leave the black issue as the second part. Well, then how come Tyler Perry, I just read, got a gajillion, there's my one of my words, y'all know I just make up words sometimes, got a gajillion more dollars from Lionsgate like a month ago or a week ago. You know, I read it, you know, I tell everybody
mm-hmm.
that listens, I read so much half the time. I don't know where I read it and how long
mm-hmm.
ago it was, but I know
you're
I read
right.
it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I read that he just got like a gajillion dollars from Lionsgate. Now, how can he get that and Spike Lee can't? And Tyler Perry's not even a filmmaker.
Tyler Perry does comedy, mostly. And black people will support comedy. They will not support, they won't support black drama.
Ooh, that's a good point.
They just won't. If you look at any statistics, you'll notice that black people will go out and see Friday. They'll go out and see, you know, all these other black comedies, First Sunday, whatever. They'll go out and see those type of films, Roscoe Brown, you know, with Martin Lawrence. They'll go see those films. Like, that's quick. Things of intensity, like Cry Freedom with Denzel Washington and The Great Debate. The only one I can say, The Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith, did phenomenal. That's because of Will Smith. Who doesn't love Will Smith?
The audience that I was watching
Pursuit of Happiness with was mostly white. Because they love Will. So that's a different, that's a whole different realm there. But it's mostly they will go see, support a comedy before drama any day.
Well, we just got hit up in the chat room again, and Big Ink says because Tyler Perry's films make money. But they didn't know
comedy.
Tyler Perry's films were going to make money until they made it. So I can't buy into that. Can you buy into that?
Oh, yeah, it's comedy. It's comedy. Black.
Wow.
Go do any research after the show and look at the movies of black comedy. Eddie Murphy movies, even if they're bad, do well. Norbit was
right.
terrible. Norbit was a terrible film, but it was a comedy, and black folks run out the first weekend and go see it. And he makes money.
You know what? just something about Will Smith. I read about Will Smith. I can't remember what magazine. Maybe it was GQ. He said that when he went to Hollywood, he studied the top grossing, and I'm trying to remember this correctly so I don't screw it up and I have his publicist yelling at me, but he said he studied the top 10 grossing films of all time. Now, this was back in the 90s.
Okay.
And he said out of those 10, they either had an animal in it or they were an action, some type of an action movie.
Okay.
So he made a very concerted effort and a firm decision that those were the only types of movies he was going to make. And with the exclusion, I believe, this wasn't in the article, of The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Right.
Don't all of his movies fit into that either action or with an animal? And then when you have, like, Men in Black, you've got both.
Right, or an animal or a child. They go hand in hand. If you have an animal or a child, you're going to make money normally.
Yeah,
so,
I guess so.
In Pursuit of Happiness, he had his son. That was another drawing power that he has a son in there.
His son
with
was
him.
So cute. Oh, my God.
Right. So, but basically, he makes sense. Anything he's done, I Am Legend, any of those films, Independence Day, Wild Wild West,
he understands
the market, though. He understands the market.
That's why
even if he does Bad Boys, he got the comedy and action, so he got both covered.
You know what? And I love Bad Boys. I could watch Bad Boys all weekend long.
Right.
Can we have a caller? Can you take a caller?
Sure.
Big Ink, you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you were just hitting us up in the chat room, so I'm just happy you decided to call in.
Well, it's a pleasure, man. I listened to the show yesterday for the first time. I've been on your website, and I will be back.
Oh, thank you. I'm a cutie, right?
Beyond that. Miss Thing, beyond that.
It's just God. It's just God glowing through me. That's all.
But I want to add something about the movie business.
Yes.
And it is. It's money. I mean, Tyler Perry, for all the genius that he is, and I don't, as somebody who likes movies, I don't look at his films as great art, but they make money, and that's Hollywood. Hollywood is about making money. It is a business. And in terms of the way black folks are portrayed on film, I went somewhere and there were guys. I think they're called the Minority Reporters. Their website is minorityreporters.com, and they talk about these six basically stereotypes. But in terms of Will Smith, he's always playing sort of the angel, or even Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman, in the last movie that he's made, you recognize that he's died at the end of all of them. He's always helping the white guy or the white girl get along. Every single movie you've known him for, that's his role. Denzel is branching out a little bit because he's got our forest. Because doing the same thing, but there are these stereotypical roles that we fit in, and as a community, we only support those roles, and we got to support like Jaguar Singh. We got to support our films.
Well, would you like to comment on that, Jillian?
He's right. I mean, they just said that I was watching a show with Michael Bazin show, and they were just saying that Hollywood doesn't have a problem putting a white actress opposite a black actor. But they have a problem putting a black actress opposite a black actor because then it's deemed a black film.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's
really crazy. So our thing is, if you have a black actress with a black actor, if we don't go out and support it, they're going to keep putting a white actress opposite a black actor, and then we have issues with that. Why it has to be a white girl with them? Then everybody have attitude. But they only, how you like the guy said, the caller, they're only going to give you money and keep giving you money if your movie makes money.
Right.
They don't care if it's black, white, Hispanic, Asian. You make over that $100 people.
Hey, can everybody hear me now? I hope so. I hope everybody can hear me. Well, we're broadcasting today talking to Jillian the Jaguar Bullock, who is just a martial arts instructor. She is, the sound I think just went out. Oh, wait a minute. BigInc.com just said the sound came back. Well, you know something, Blog Talk Radio, this is, you guys got to, you know, y'all messing with my show here. I can't have that. I definitely am going to hit them up and let them know that this is not a good look because our shows are getting too popular. Jillian, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm back. How you doing?
This is so not cool, and so all I can do is say, you know, I apologize. Well, it's not my fault, so you know what? I'm apologizing, but not apologizing for anything that I did. There must be some trouble with the server or something like that. So I want to make sure we make the best use of the time that we have together. Can you talk to us about your first book, The Killing of Innocence?
Killing of Innocence is a book that, and I wrote the script that a few producers in Hollywood are looking at to bring to the big screen. It's about my life growing up with my white stepfather who was in the Italian mafia in Philadelphia. So that kind of sums it up right there.
Well, that was a short one. Well, I want to touch on this, too, because I grew up with a white stepfather.
Okay.
Was
he in the mob?
No, he wasn't in the mob. And
okay.
You know what? I was accused by a lot of black people growing up, oh, you act white. And I still have a cousin to this day who every time she sees me, she's, and now we're like in our late 30s, she's like, Saida, remember when you used to talk like a white girl and you used to wear little pearl earrings all the time? You know, all my cousins had gold loop earrings and my mother wouldn't let me. You know, she made me wear like little pearl earrings. And it was kind of weird because when he and I went out together, I don't know what people thought, but for me it was so normal, and I didn't understand what racism was. And to top it off, we lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is probably, it just wasn't very friendly to a white guy with a little black kid. Did you experience racism as well, just growing up with a white stepfather? White stepfather.
Well, everybody on my block was white, and my brother and I, we were the only black kids on the block, but everybody knew who my stepfather was.
Okay.
Even though I didn't,
because
not at the time.
Idea.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was. I guess the parents knew. They never, put it this way, one incident I remember racing one time in my life was when somebody called my brother, used the N-word on my brother. He was about 12 or 13. I'm younger than he is.
Uh-huh.
And put it this way, the boy that called my brother the N-word, the next day the family was moving out of the neighborhood.
Are you serious?
So I guess my stepfather had a talk with him.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That takes muscle when you can get like a whole family to be like, yo, I don't even want you on my block anymore.
Right, yeah. I mean, it was either that or probably something else deadlier, so I guess that was it. I'm pretty sure that was the thing, either you move or else, you know.
Oh, my goodness. So did you grow up with, like, all the stuff that the kids had, like, on The Sopranos, or did you grow up, like,
yeah,
normal?
No, I mean, I was the baby. My stepfather raised me from when I was 2 on up, and I went a lot of places with him, a lot of places I shouldn't have been with him, probably. I saw my first mob hit when I was 9 years old, and from there I learned about, as I got older, he taught me how to shoot guns, and I learned about extortion, racketeering.
Oh, my God.
All of that stuff, because I was there, and, you know, but the thing that he taught me, he was the one that actually got me into believing that I could be a filmmaker, because every Saturday he would take me to the movies.
Really?
And he would say, one day you will be a writer and a director, because he loved movies so much. He said that was his time to unwind and not think about his business, even though he usually took me to gangster movies. I usually went to see James Cagney or, you know, Humphrey Bogart or something, Edward G. Robinson. Yeah, but, you know, that was his time to relax. So we had a very unique relationship until about 15 when he was killed. So, you know.
Oh, painful, heartbreaking.
You
know, it's so funny. I had a guest on the show, and his name is Jose Villegas, and he talks about how to conquer your mind and live better, But the point is, he said something very profound when he was on the show. He said Tiger Woods plays golf because his father played golf.
Uh-huh.
He said, if Tiger Woods had my father, he probably would have done the things that I did and had my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen to what you're saying. So do you think there is a direct correlation between you cherishing those moments, going to the movies, to now being a filmmaker?
Yeah, I mean, I think it saved me to have his dream, because before he died, he promised me that no matter what, that, you know, he said, you will become a filmmaker. And I think that saved me, because even after he died and for many years after that, I still had like a mafia mentality, because after he died, I was on the streets, homeless, and I had to survive. I had to do a lot of criminal activity. I got involved in drugs and prostitution. Even after I got out of that, for many years after that, I still had that mentality that, you know, like I was still rough and cold, and,
mm-hmm.
and if someone stepped out of line, I would, you know, knock them around. That's what I would do. Especially being
right.
I would take care of it, especially with my training and in martial arts and boxing and everything. I would take care of it, you know. So I had to learn to be softer, and that took a lot of time to learn that. And still, I still have my rough edges, but I'm much calmer than I used to. But it's that mentality of always thinking. Put it this way, my daughter, when she watches the Goodfellas or something like that, she said, Mom, your uncles are on TV. That's what she says. So,
you know, I joke with people and I say, you know, you still got a little hood in you.
Yeah, I mean, I had to refine it, because I was, like I said, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal and everything,
right.
And you know you have to go in there a certain way, you know that.
Press that edge a little bit.
Yeah, but it does come out, but I'm still working on it, because you growing up that way,
yeah.
Seeing all that violence and you learn how to take care of yourself, and you learn how to not to be a pushover. Nobody gets over on you. So, but you know, it's hard. You have to think that, you know, you don't have to go out and kill somebody just because they looked at you the wrong way.
I know. We have a caller. We're down to the last, under 10 minutes of the show. Big Ink, you there? You have a question? One more question, because I have 2 questions in the chat room that I have to ask as well.
Oh, okay. You can hear me?
Yep, we can hear you. Shoot.
Oh, yes. I think she addressed it, and I wanted to find out. I mean, every person who grows up in a community where they might be the only one sometimes has a, you know, welcome to myself moment, where you realize, for me, it was playing soccer on an all-white team in New Jersey, and one of the kids at 11 years old saying, you dirty nigger, and trying to step on me. With her, what was her, you know, moment where she said, you know what, I am a black woman, you know, I'm not Italian, you know, I'm a black woman. What was that moment?
I guess it was a moment that I was about 12 years old, and I was in the schoolyard, and a group of white kids came up and said that my stepfather was a nigger lover, and he spit in my face, and I beat him with a rock, almost killed him. And I said, wait a minute, you know, I am still a black girl. I said, I thought I was going to prison. I said, you know, I had all these things in my mind. I said, I'm going to go to prison. I got suspended for a week, but I had to go to court. And I said, I'm going to jail, even though I'm a kid, because I almost killed this white boy. But then, of course, my stepfather took care of that, so that was that. So.
That's crazy.
So I didn't have to go to court.
I've been called more names by black people and my own people than I have ever been called by white people. And I guess that just means in my face. So growing up in a biracial environment, my mom being black and my stepfather being white, to me it was normal, but I guess it's all about your definition of what normal is. Dropping Seed Radio has a quick question. He wants to know, how did you not get sucked into that life?
Oh, I did get sucked into it for a long time. From age, with my stepfather, when I saw my first mob hit, up until 15 when he died, and I think about from 15 to in my mid-30s, I was living that life, not killing people, but I was still doing foul things because that was my mentality. Even though I had children and my children never saw that part of me, I had two lives, basically. I was a Wall Street Journal reporter, college educated on one side, and the other side I was living a foul life because it's hard when you don't have the support to change that mentality because it's ingrained in you for such a long time. I had to do it on my own. I had to read a lot of books and go to some seminars and how to be a better person, motivational. I had to go to those type of places to try to learn to not be that way anymore, and it took many years to do that.
You know, one of the things I advocate on this show is a change partner. Everybody needs a change partner, somebody that's looking to make a change in their life, and you two partner up and hold each other accountable because it's not easy to do things on your own. It's not easy. So I must absolutely commend you on initiating, taking the initiative to change in your life. And it's hard. You know, I'm writing a piece right now, kind of like an op-ed, called Half In and Half Out. And it's about the fact that we do, especially as black women, have to lead a double life because you're saying you are a Wall Street Journal reporter, so I know it had that conservative edge, but then after 5 o'clock, you had that little, you still had that little hood part of you. And that's one of the things that just even people of color, professionals have to deal with, how we do have to play both sides and how that can create a lot of confusion in our minds. I'm thinking, is that something that you had to experience as well?
It was very difficult because, like I said, I still had, at that time, people who were in that lifestyle that I, still hung around, and then I had to go in the morning and cover Fortune 500 companies, and I didn't fit in. I couldn't go to the country clubs and fit in or go to, any of the types of the dinner parties. I had to go to cover events, but I felt so out of place because I was raised as a gangster, really.
Right.
So that's all I knew.
Well, I'm all about deliverance and the power of deliverance. So I just want to commend you because what you did and what you've achieved is not easy. We're down to the last couple minutes of the show. Would you like to leave a final thought for all of our listeners?
If anybody's interested in the self-defense or anything, I'd like them to go to my website or email me. I would like to talk to people, get them involved. They could go to my website, which is www.jaguar, like the car, jaguarselfdefense.com is one word, jaguarselfdefense.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want people to write me and see, what they feel. And if any way I could be of any assistance, because, I feel as though God allowed me to survive what I survived without going to jail, without getting shot, to turn my life around to help others. And that is definitely my sole purpose now, is to help not just women with self-defense, but to help people in any way that I possibly can to live a better life.
Well, it's funny because I got hit up in the chat room, what about contacting the guest? So I did put Jaguar Self-Defense in our chat room, so it's archived. So people that do listen to the show, they can go right to jaguarselfdefense.com. I just want to thank you so, so much taking the time to join us today. This show, I tell everybody, this show is so about change and having the courage to change and just being inspired and motivated by other people's testimony. It's just heartwarming. I just want to thank you, Jillian, so much. Thank you for Shamika, my producer, who was able to set it up and make it happen. If you want to be a guest on the show, next week, don't forget, is all about authors, self-published authors, traditionally published authors. So any authors out there, give me a buzz. Just letting you know that I am being honored at the Unlock Your Dreams Conference in August at the Holiday Inn in Times Square. And log on to Life Remix Radio. Rate the show. Let me know how I'm doing. Let me know if you like the show, what guests you would like to see. Thank you so, so much for listening today, and I love you. Oh, my goodness, I almost forgot to give my closing prayer. I can't forget to do that. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. And wherever I am, God is. Thanks, God, and so it is.